of Shimshon's Geula Tefillah and how exactly it plays out with Maariv. It's not exactly the same as how it operates regarding chakras. We find that there is a machlokas in the Gemara, as we've noted, on Daf Dalet, as to whether or not it even applies to Maariv. And the view that we follow is the view of Rabbi Yochanan that there is such an obligation. Rabbi Shua ben Levi thought not, that there was no full geula until the morning. And Rabbi Yochanan said, no, there was a little bit of a geula at night also, so night also counts. So the question is, how do we account for the fact that it operates in a different way? That, yes, it's true, we do structure Maariv with Shema ben Shmona Esrei, but after that there are some differences, too, specifically. One is that we're not as absolute as we are in the morning, when we don't allow any daylight in between Shema and Shmona Esrei, between Gal Yisrael and Shmona Esrei. So at Maariv we allow Hashkivenu, that already the Gemara addresses. But what the Gemara doesn't address is that we also allow Kaddish and Baruch Hashem La'olam, etc., etc. And in terms of a more theoretical case, a more contingent case, that if we come in late, so when it comes to Shacharis, even though we'll skip to catch up to Tefillah V'Tzibur, but we won't skip Shema because Gal Yisrael is a priority. While when it comes to Maariv, so we will skip to go right to Shmona Esrei in order to be with the Tzibur. Apparently, Tefillah B'Tzibur is a greater priority than Smichus Geula Tefillah. So we started to discuss this question of what exactly is the nature of the obligation of Smichus Geula Tefillah. And we noticed Rashi over here on our Gemara in Daled Amud Beis. So Rashi has 2 points to make about Smichus Geula Tefillah. And interestingly enough, Rashi immediately changes the subject to chakras. When the Gemara says that you have to have it at Maariv, so Rashi says, yeah, and all the more so at chakras, so what's the story there? The story is that, on the one hand, David HaMelech did it himself, because we find in Tehillim he says, Hashem Tzuri V'Gayli, and then the next parak of Tehillim he says, Yan Hashem B'Yom Tzara, and so apparently first reference to Gula, then a type of tefillah right after that. And we find also a mashal that he gives of somebody who knocks on the king's door, and then when the king finally shows up, this guy, so it's kind of a prank, the guy who's knocking has left. The king says, what am I going to come to the door for? So I'm going to leave too. So these two examples, or these two expressions that Rashi gives, may or may not, depending on how you understand it. I think we mentioned, but Willie talks about this in the Sefer HaMordechai, and the Stifler talks about this in the Kilsink of the Brachas, that there are at least two perspectives one could take on the whole relationship here. Right? That when you say that Geula and Tefillah should be together, so who are we helping? Are we helping the Geula or are we helping Tefillah? Is the idea that the Geula, the expression that we believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Goel, so that is enhanced if we then immediately follow it up with a tefillah, or it shows that we really believe He's the Redeemer if we ask for something from Him, as opposed to anywhere else, or not at all. So that, some understand as correlating to the first point made in Rashi. While the other point could be that tefillah is enhanced by this relationship. That we have this relationship in order to make the tefillah more well received. And that's the mashal of knocking on the door. It's a way of getting the king's attention, a way of appeasing the king, so to speak. So then that's a waste if we're going to do that. And when the door finally opens, when we finally have the audience, we're not going to take it. We're not going to dive in then. So those two positions. So, how do they help us understand the Maariv question? So, Rav Soloveitchik, as we started to explain last time, Rav Soloveitchik has a lengthy shiur on this. It's 22 pages in the shiur Mosech Rav Mori, which is the average size. They're all about that length. And he essentially notes the following. first of all, in terms of the question of our greater flexibility of allowing interruptions in the middle, so some of the Rishonim explain, you know, why do we do that? We do that because Tulas Arvis Rishos, which we'll explain hopefully soon, that the Gemara says in the fourth parak that Tulas Arvis has some type of an optional kind of status. So the question is, so because of that, apparently, so some of the Rishon, Tosfos in a few places understand that we throw in these interruptions because of that. So it's very hard to understand. So what is Rishon? So it's a mitzvah for us to advertise that. We have to specifically go out of our way to kind of show less respect to Meir because it's a Rishon. So Rav Soloveitchik noted that we have to consider which direction we're coming from. That on the one hand, is tefillah enhanced by having geula before it? So the answer is yes. And he noted that there is a concept of a tefillah nedava, that the Gemara says in Daf Chaf Aleph Halavai she yispal adam kol yom kulo, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that a person could theoretically daven all day long. And that would be terrific. So, how are you going to daven all day long? There's only so long you can make your Shmoneh Esrei, so three Shmoneh Esrei is not going to take you all day, no matter who you are. So apparently that means there's a concept of a tefillos nedava, that in addition to the three tefillos, a person can volunteer an extra tefillah. However, you find that it's not completely open. There are certain requirements for nedava. Some of them are kavana-based, which is why nowadays you don't find nedavas offered so frequently. Even let's say somebody finds himself in a situation of a tsar, or somebody finds himself in a situation where he really feels he needs to offer a hakaras hatov to a kadosh baruch hu, still we don't just have him davening a random shmoneh esrei as you might expect. Why that is an interesting question. It sounds like from the Shulchan Aruch that you need a phenomenal amount of kavanah in order to justify a nedava. And the Shulchan Aruch says that if you can't maintain that level of kavanah, then it's enough that you should be able to try to focus on the shmoneh esreis that you're obligated. Then don't go looking for more obligations. So based on that, there is a debate between the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan as to whether or not today anyone has the proper kavanah for nedava, that maybe we should say that nowadays we're not on the level at all to add in nedava, and we should just stick to the three that we have. So it could be that the pshara, the path between those two opinions, is that we do have a nedava only when it comes in handy to deal with a suffix in tefillah, and we'll talk about that in a different context. If we're not sure if we're obligated in davening, so then the nedava is sometimes a way to address it.
So the Mishnah Berurah is the one that says that you can?
If I remember correctly, it says not to. You know, that nowadays we don't have the possibility of doing it. So, in any event, one of the requirements along those lines is Tzarech Shechadesh Bo Davar, that you have to have some type of chiddush, that it can't be the same as...
If the suffix on Tfilah Nedava, if you ever have a suffix on having to repeat Shmoneh Esrei, why are we then permitted to repeat Shmoneh Esrei?
So that's actually what we use it for. That really, if you have a suffix about davening, so really we should say suffix derabanan lahakil. Right? Davening for the most part, or really for the whole part, is going to be a chiyuv derabanan. So if you have a situation where you're not sure if you're obligated, we should say you should not do it. You should say suffix derabanan lahakil. So the reason sometimes we do it may draw on this idea of a nedava, that since we could also offer a nedava, so building on that, we have a concept of a conditional nedava, that we could say, if I'm obligated in this tefillah, let this be my chiyuv. And if it turns out that really I'm wrong, I'm not obligated, so then let this be a nedava.
So a regular, why wouldn't it work for a regular nedava that just davens as a nedava to want a special tefillah?
It would work theoretically. The question is whether nowadays we can do it or not, whether we're at the level to do it or not. So
if we're not in the level to do it, then we can't daven Shmoneh Esrei. I mean,
Well, Kedavra on Normal Shmoneh Esrei is an obligation. The Shulchan Aruch pours on this extra level of intent on somebody who's volunteering one. The Shulchan Aruch says that if you're going to put an extra one on the list, that's not a chiyuv, so then you have to be massively focused in order to do that. That's not something you should take on lightly. And then he goes on to say that if you can't reach that level, so then better you should focus on the three obligatory ones, because that already is justified by nature of the obligation. But we use it when we're not sure if it's an obligation, so really, technically speaking, the rules should let us off the hook. So many understand that that's a situation where we use an adava. Then an adava comes in handy to hedge our bets. That if we're obligated, it's good. If we're not obligated, then it'll be an adava. And without that need, then we don't usually resort to an adava. And that halacha itself, by the way, that policy of using it for a safek, could be because of this din that we're mentioning now, when we're told that sarach shechadesh bo'davar, that we have to be mechadesh something, there has to be something different than our tefillah in order to justify it. So there's a whole range of views in Rishonim what that means. Some say it's just a function of kavana, there has to be a more intense kavana. Some understand that there's the literal chiddush, that we put something into the brachos, we know that in theory we're allowed to add into the middle of brachos, Shemeh Tzula in the general sense, and other brachos also, where it's relevant to the bracha. So maybe it's something that has to be added into the Shemoneh Esrei. Some of the Rishonim say, by the way, about this policy that we just mentioned, that if you're doing it in order to get out of a safek, that itself is a chiddush. That itself can justify the extra tefila, which then correlates this policy to use it dafka under those circumstances, that this requirement of a chiddush. So what do you see from all of that? You see that we need some kind of justification for davening, that when we have a chiyuv, that's one thing, but especially if we don't have a chiyuv, then we need to be able to justify our doing it. Theoretically, we could volunteer a tefillah, but it could be only when we have some type of a justification to add this tefillah. So if you keep that structure in mind, so we have this idea that in general, tefillah needs some type of a matir, some type of a justification. And therefore, if we're talking about tefillah's arvus, when tefillah's arvus is considered to be a reshus on some level, so does that need a justification? All the more so. Tefillah in general probably needs some type of an entree, some type of something that lets us in. So that's all the more so true if it's not a real chiyuv tefillah. Parenthetically, they quote from the Rav, there's machlokas rishonim that we paskin, you know, the Gemara says that when you make a bracha on a mitzvah, so the bracha has to be before the mitzvah, overlaps the asana, that's what the Gemara says. But there was a view in the rishonim that theoretically, b'di'evad, the bracha could be recited after the mitzvah as well. So as a salvechik notice, apparently have a machlokas, does the bracha possibly, can it possibly be recited after the mitzvah, or does it have to always be specifically before the mitzvah? And he suggested that it reflects two different understandings in what a bracha from mitzvah is about. That is it a bracha of praise for the opportunity of the mitzvah? In which case you think, at least theoretically, it could be after. So if we insist it has to be specifically before, so he explained that maybe there could be some parallel there to a bracha on food. That we know a bracha on food, in a sense, is a matir, is that really, like the Gemara says, that we can't enjoy this world without making a bracha, so it's as if we're kind of like stealing, so therefore we have to make a bracha in order to use this world, use the benefits of this world. So maybe so too when it comes to a mitzvah, if you want to come and approach God, so to speak, you want to engage in this spiritual experience, you need permission, you need to knock first, you need to ask for some type of audience, and that's what the Berachas HaMitzvah does. So when it comes to Shemoneh Esrei also, apparently we need some type of Chiddush, and that is all the more true when it's less, the less obligatory it is, the more we need permission. You can use the parallel Rashi has about the king. You know, if the king summons somebody to his palace, so then that's one level of what you have to do to come in. But if the king hasn't asked for you, so you would imagine you'd have to make a much greater effort to try to gain an audience, and you'd have to be even more submissive than you would if the king actually requested you to be there. We know from Megillus Esther and how afraid she was to go without being summoned. And if she's summoned, it's one thing. If she's not summoned, then it's a whole different level of intimidation, so to speak.
If she's summoned, she needs a matir not to come.
Right, exactly. But to come without an invitation is more brazen, so to speak, than to come with an invitation. So too, if a Kadosh Baruch Hu have a chiyuv, if we're told al pi halacha we have to daven, that's one thing. If we don't know that we have a chiyuv, there's a greater need for asking for permission. So too, when it comes to Ma'ariv, maybe Ma'ariv all the more so needs something before it. So this idea that Rashi says that Gulu Asfila is like knocking on the door before having the king open up, so if Shacharis needs that, then Ma'ariv for sure needs it. However, what about the other aspect? What about the idea that Shema needs Shemon Esrei, that Smichus Gula Tefillah enhances the Geula, that the Geula becomes more powerful when it's connected to an expression of Tefillah afterwards. So that it seems to be that doesn't work as well for Ma'ariv. It works for Shachar. Shachar, we could take our Shema Gal Yisrael and join it together with Shemona Esrei, and that makes a beautiful package. But when it comes to the night time, since Shema is a chiyuv, and actually a chiyuv d'oraisa, and Shemona Esrei is essentially a rishus, essentially voluntary, so then it seems that those can't really combine. That's not a proper shidduch. It's a mixed marriage over there, so then that's not going to work. So when it comes to Ma'ariv, we actually need the interruption there, so to speak, the Kaddish and whatever else is going to be there, in order to make a statement that we're not actually joining Shema and Shemona Esrei at night. In the morning, we're creating a seamless unit, but at night, we're not actually joining them together. So what emerges? So yes, there is a debate in our Gemara over here whether to have it at all at night. And yes, we paskin, the answer is we do. What does that mean, we do? It doesn't mean the same thing as it does when it comes to Shacharis. When it comes to Shacharis, it means we make a seamless unit between Shema and Shemona Esrei, because there is mutual benefit both to Shema and to Shemona Esrei. When it comes to Ma'ariv, it doesn't mean all of that. It just means that we structure our tefillah Shema then Shemona Esrei, and not the reverse, like Rav Shua ben Levi, that it should be Shemona Esrei then Shema. So it means we structure it the way we do. But in terms of creating a seamless unit, that we don't do, and in fact we intentionally don't do. We create some type of bump in the road in order to show that there is a disparity of obligation between the two. So that would explain the difference in terms of what we allow in between. And in terms of prioritization, so why is it that Shacharis we'll skip if we have to, but we won't skip Shema, and we'll make sure that's there. Because as a dual function, so then that combines to be a greater priority than Tzilu B'Tzibur. But at night, so it's not, it's important, but it's not a greater priority than Tzilu B'Tzibur. Tzilu B'Tzibur, if we have to choose, then that's going to come first. Okay, so that's the gist.
Did it fit it into the statement of the Tosfot?
Which statement does this?
Tosfot end up saying, I think the Tosfot says the Kivan, or the Gemara maybe, that the Kivan Tikno, it's not considered Hefsek.
About Hashkivena?
Yeah.
Yes, that's the Gemara here. So actually, so about that Gemara, so the Gemara raises this question of, so how do we have Hashkivena? So Hashkivena, which is separate, you know, like we mentioned, on top of Hashkivena is still Kaddish, and the other, I mean, that's what you mean by Tosfos, because they talk about about the Baruch Shem Olam. So right, so that they add on to. So that's part of this whole view in the Rishonim that that it's a function of Tfilas Arvus Rishus. Right, but when the Gemara talks about Hashkivenus, that's now let's try to mention that for a minute. So what does it mean when it says the Gemara raises this question that if we're supposed to connect it to, so how do we say Hashkivenus? So the Gemara says, well, it must be that once Chazal put it there, so then that's not considered to be a hafsik, rather, ki geula arichta. It's like a long geula. And the Gemara goes on to say, you have to say it like that, because if you don't say it like that, How do we say Hashem Tzvasai? We know that when we say Shacharis, that we need to have Smich Zula Tzvila. And yet, even though we don't have Hashkivenu there, we do have Hashem Tzvasai Tiftach. So how do we allow that? It must be that in both cases, it's an extension onto that part of the equation. So Hashem Tzvasai is Kitzvila Arichta. Dami is like a long Tzvila. So too, Hashkivenu is like Geula Arichta Dami. So what exactly did that mean? So the Rishon, some of the Rishonim, the Rush and the Rashbag, have a discussion. There's a Gemara later on that says that you could say Shema Ma'ariv all night, but if you find that you're up all night and you're going to say this, you're going to daven Ma'ariv right before the morning, so that you shouldn't say Hashkivenu. That sounds a little bit like a joke. Hashkivenu means I'm going to sleep now, help me sleep well. So if it's at the end of the night and you're not sleeping then, so you should leave out Hashkivenu. So what does it mean to leave out Hashkivenu? So some of the Rishonim say that it doesn't mean leave out the whole bracha of Hashkivenu. It means the words Hashkivenu at the very beginning when we say I'm going to sleep, so you're not going to sleep, so leave that out. But the rest of the bracha you should say. So why should you say the rest of the bracha? So as Rav Shechter notes, he has a discussion in one of his svarim that seems to suggest that really this bracha must have something to do with Geula. Because apparently even when we don't want the Hashkivenu part, we still want the rest of it. So therefore, says when the Gemara says that it's Kegeula, you could read that in two ways. And you could read it as saying, look, this has nothing to do with Geula. But Chazal told us to say it. So therefore, it's not a hefsek. It's not a problem to put it in here. It's not Geula, but it's not a problem of saying it between Geula and Tzvila. Or you could have said more than that. You could have said that when Chazal put this here, they were telling us that this is of a theme with Geula, and this is consistent, and therefore, that's why it's not an interruption, not just because the rabbis gave us permission by dint of ordering it, but they put it there because it's connected to Geula. So it still makes us in a position of Geula Tzvila. So the fact that these Rishonim say, they still say it, even if you're not saying the Hashkivenu part, that seems to suggest that it is a Mamasha Geula. And if that's the case, then he discusses, so you could then apply that to trying to figure out what Hashem Svasai does. So we say Hashem Svasai before Shemona Esrei, and the Gemara over here connects them. It says that, oh, you have to say they operate the same way. The Hashkivenu is a long Geula, and Hashem Svasai is a long Tefila. So you could ask the same question by both. Is it part of Geula or Tefila, or is it a justified insertion? So it sounds like from here that it's actually a part of these things. Now what difference does that make? So, for example, when we talk about Hashem Tzvasai specifically, that could make a lot of difference. There are a number of questions that could be affected. So we say Hashem Tzvasai before we start Shemona Esrei. So is that a way of, is that just an introductory sentence that's not part of Shemona Esrei? Or is it actually a part of Tefillah? So what difference would it make? So, for example, let's say you make a mistake in the middle of davening, and you have to go back again. So should you say Hashem Tzvasai again? Or do we say, no, you said that before Tefillah, and now you're in the middle of Tefillah, you're starting over. You're starting over again from the actual bracha, not from Hashem Tzvasai. Or the whole question of whether or not the Shliach Tzibur, when he repeats Shemona Esrei, should he say Hashem Tzvasai and Yulei Ratzon out loud? So is that considered to be a part of Shemona Esrei that he's repeating? Or is that just an introductory sentence which doesn't necessarily have to be repeated out loud as part of Chazaras Hashatz? So all of this really goes to the question of, do we just say it and it's justified because we're told to say it? Or no, it's more than that. It became a part of Tefillah, and therefore all the halachas of Tefillah apply to it. Also in terms of the correlate at the end, Yehi L'Ratzon and Reifi, so you have the same question. Is that just a closing sentence then? Or is that part of Shemona Esrei? So that affects also the question, when we say Vidui on Erev Yom Kippur, so we add that in technically after Shemona Esrei, but before we leave, so to speak, before we leave the audience of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So So should that be before or after Hila Ratzon? Is that part of Shemoneh Esrei, or is that something we say at the end of the experience, so to speak? So all of these questions all go to one central question. This addition, what does it mean? Is it a justified interruption, an introduction and a closing line? Or is it actually grafted onto Tefillah and has all the halachas of Tefillah? So even though our Gemara doesn't say so much about it, the fact that the Gemara links it to Hashkiveinu, says they both have the same mechanism to justify their inclusion, seems to suggest they could be instructive about each other. So maybe that goes to this question of the Rishonim, what is Hashkiveinu? Is Hashkiveinu just a bracha of help me sleep well, or is it a bracha that really has something to do with Geula, and we'd say it even if we're not going to sleep because it's the end of the night?
In your shul, the Chazan Shasat, Chazarat Hashatz, he says, Hashem Shasat Yitzhak.
So Rav Soloveitchik was not good at that one should. Shulchan Aruch sounds a little bit different. It's, it's a little bit of a discussion and practice what to do. And that goes to this alumnus, really, of what exactly is it? Is it just something that the individual says is, I'm about to daven, right? So what is the language here? We say, open my mouth as I am about to daven. So is it the sentence before, which would mean you don't necessarily have to say it out loud? Or is it a greater statement that that actually becomes a part of tefillah? Remember, the halacha once, somebody asked Rav Shechter once in the Shemoneh Esrei in Mincha after Shir, that they said that they forgot to say Yal V'Yavo. It's Rish Chodesh. They forgot to say Yal V'Yavo, but they focused on paying very close attention to the Shliach Tzibur during Chazaras Hashatz and had intent to be okay with him. So maybe he shouldn't have to repeat Shemoneh Esrei now to say Yal V'Yavo again because it was Yotzei with the Chazan. So Shechter said, in theory, that could have worked. Except that he noticed that the Shliach Tzibur didn't say Hashem Svasai out loud, so he thought that that didn't that took away from the tefillah. So that was that's one side of it. You could have said differently that it doesn't necessarily join the tefillah itself.
That's his own innovation.
Well, he said that's based on that's based on this side of the Chakir. It's also an interesting discussion about this. If you look at the Sefer Naim Mishpat and Maseches Brachos. So he also goes through a couple of other possible halachic ramifications of this idea, but he's able to, assuming like the Rav's view, the Rav insisted the Shliach Tzibur say aloud, means he was taking a stance that it was apparently a part of tefillah itself. So what I want to pick up on now is we've said this idea of tefillah's arvus reshus, that it's optional. So what does that mean? Does that mean that tonight you don't really have to show up for marv? Doesn't mean that. It means something else. What exactly it means will be our cliffhanger until tomorrow. So tomorrow morning we'll pick up from that point. Let's try to figure out what does that sentence mean, which is really a fourth part of sugya, but while we're talking about it here and while we're while it's impacting on the sugya, we might as well look a little bit at what that means. So we'll try to discuss that tomorrow.